Hello, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I am here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you doing tonight?
Very good, thanks.
So, today, we're going to do Ouija board stories, and not your run-of-the-mill Ouija board stories.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll start those in just a moment. I'd like to ask our people who are watching this on YouTube, if you were to click the subscribe button down below, click the bell so that you get notified when we release new content, which we're doing every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern. And right now we're in Eastern Daylight Time. And we have the Facebook groups, the Paranormalist Podcast, the Paranormal Group Share, and the Paranormal Asylum. And we also have the email address, paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com. And ready for you to send us your ideas, your stories, whatever you'd like to send us. And as always, we will treat those with the utmost respect and care. And I think with that, and in case you missed some of that because I was talking a little bit fast because I am caffeinated today, all the links will be down below in the show notes. All right. And with that, Ouija boards.
Ouija boards. So this actually started with a conversation with one of our listeners. Mm-hmm. She shared a story with me that I want to share on one of the upcoming episodes. And then she shared a Ouija board story and mentioned that I hadn't done anything on Ouija boards for a long time. So I got interested again. I mean, I've been kind of laying it back in my head and leaving it go. Because a lot of times, they are always such dark stories. There's very few positive Ouija board stories.
Yeah, and I avoided those, even as a younger person, I avoided those like the plague. I mean, it wasn't a game, you know, even though it was sold in the stores as a game, it certainly was no game.
Yeah, I have to tell you, my first encounter with it was actually at school, because in the third grade, they actually had a Ouija board in the back of our classroom, along with the checkers and all that other stuff that on rainy days kids could get out. And I don't know why, because I didn't know anything about it back then. It was just something, but it gave me the creeps even back then. It was like, I wouldn't touch it. I wouldn't play it. When the kids were playing it, I would go to the far other side of the room and just sort of sit there. And the teacher's like, aren't you going to play today, Patty? And I'm like, no, not right now. I just didn't like them. They made me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as I grew up and I got to knowing more about things, I understood a little bit more. Then I found a book called The Ouija Board, Doorway to the Occult, when I was about 16, 17. And this book actually came from a Christian university library. My mother spoke Greek and Aramaic, and she was a biblical scholar. And she was taking classes. And I was bumbling around in the library because I was bored one afternoon waiting for her. And I came across this book and borrowed it. And I have a copy of my own now, because the book really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. So I'm going to give a very quick overview. So there have been a Ouija board type device since the beginning of time, really, since ancient Greece and in the Middle East. There's always been a divining tool used to communicate with the dead, similar to the Ouija board. And the incarnation of it we now have is one that started in the late 1800s. So after the Civil War, there was a push towards spiritualism, because a lot of people lost loved ones and they didn't have any way to know what happened to them. Or they lost loved ones that they never got to say goodbye to. So the idea of spiritualism, communicating with the dead, table tipping, that kind of stuff, became very popular. An offshoot of that became the talking board, which would become the Ouija board. And to give you an idea how popular they were, in 1891 in Pittsburgh, which would have just been an average size, you know, city at that time, they were sold by the thousands. It was amazing how popular they were. And then at one point, as it goes into the early 1900s, the Parker Brothers ends up selling like 2 million a year. So the boards have been made in many incarnations. Like I said, the one we know today actually came from Baltimore, and it was built there by a company. The people that started the company, they were not even spiritualists. They just saw an opportunity because they could see that there was an interest. So they decided to create this company and make this Ouija board that looks very much like our Ouija board today, and put the alphabet on it, and it was very much the same. So they built this board, they started a company, and it took off gangbusters. They were selling literally 40, 50,000 at a time. Proud a year. It was a lot of money. And, you know, even at a dollar, I think it was like $1.50 a board retail, that's a lot of money in that time frame.
Right, right.
And there's a gentleman there who, his name was William Fuld, F-U-L-D. And they gave it the name Ouija, meaning oui, as in French for yes, and ja, which is German for yes.
For yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's the yes, yes board. And thus the board was born the way we have it today. Now, Fold becomes the partner in the company. There were four partners. Fold becomes the partner in the company who is most intensely impacted by the board. So he and his brother run the company. And over time, they will eventually buy out the other partners. And he says that the board told him to build a big factory, which he does build. Ironically, he will eventually fall off the top of the roof of that factory and die. And he and his brother had, they had a lot of money, but they also didn't get along very well. They were constantly fighting about the board. His brother ended up starting another company. And it just became one of those things, like the board itself was just took over their lives. They had both had a bit of an interest in spiritualism at one point. So it kind of funneled in, and they actually used the board. As I said, Fold would say later that he was told by the board to build the company, to build that great big factory where he would die in 1927. Now, the boards were interesting, and they were marketed as a toy. But here's one of the things that's fascinating, and this is something you don't come across any place other than in this book. And they have articles they notated where they actually got the information. So whenever Fuld died and the company was sold to Parker Brothers, there was a clause in the sale that a certain number, a few thousand boards a year, would be delivered to Fuld or his appointed descendant, whoever that might have been, in perpetuity. These boards were left at the designated spot. It didn't have to be the factory. They could have some other place that they wanted them delivered, because over time, people's, you know, locations change. So maybe they won't have the factory, and maybe it'll be the garage of their home or an industrial building. But wherever it is said that they want the boards delivered, and the boards will remain with the representative for 2 weeks, at which point the boards will then be picked up and they can then be sold. There has never been any explanation for why, nor has anybody ever spoken about what was supposed to happen to the boards during that 2 weeks. I have no clue, other than to say that it just doesn't smell right to me. I don't know.
It doesn't. Yeah, and you think that somebody would like sneak an Apple AirTag into the package or something and just, you know, see where they went. But
I mean, they knew where they were going, but the thing is, what were they doing with them for 2 weeks?
Exactly. Yeah. So,
you know, so, and then, like I said, the company could come pick them back up. And so it's just a bizarre side note that continued on for a long, long time. And right now, as of now, anytime there was turmoil and trouble in the nation, sales of these boards shot up. People needed distracted. People were trying to find some sort of help, things like that. So during, you know, like I said, after the Civil War, they started becoming popular. Then World War I, the Great Depression and World War II, all of these periods of time, anytime that there was really conflict in the country, there were high sale marks for the board. And that could, again, be, like I said, just because people were looking for an answer for what was going on. One of the highest marks, high water marks for sales was in the Great Depression. People didn't have money for food, but they would buy one of these boards to see if they could get some assistance. And people began to trust these boards and to believe that the spirits that were talking to them were spirits of human beings who had died, and that these spirits might be able to impart to them important information. At one point, the boards were actually used to dictate novels. There's a woman by the name of Mrs. Pearl Curran. She was not a very well-educated lady, but she would end up saying that she, through the course of a couple years, a character, a spirit, dictated a novel to her that was written in Elizabethan English. And even though she was a woman who sort of stumbled with being able to read, she certainly didn't have any classical training in writing. It was accurate. Scholars were amazed at the accuracy of the language and how things were phrased and what have you. Then she had a friend who would encounter another spirit and also write a book. She claimed that she had been talking to Samuel Clemens, for those who don't recognize the name, his Mark Twain, who had passed away, and that he dictated a novel through her. And there was literally an award-winning poet who wrote a poem called Changing Light at Sandover, and it won tons of awards. And he claimed that it was dictated by a spirit to him. So there was a lot of this going on at the time. And then as things happened, the board kind of fell out of favor. It was just one of those things chucked up on an attic shelf and what have you. And then in the 1970s, for those people who don't know it, the world went crazy in the early 1970s, late 60s, early 70s. There was the war in Vietnam. There was the sexual revolution. There was the hippies and the whole nine yards, and a lot of race division and rioting and what have you. So it becomes popular again at that period of time. And the movie The Exorcist comes out. And this is when there's a change in the beliefs about the board. Up until now, it was believed that the board was talking to dead people. And now, through the movie, people begin to entertain the idea that maybe they're not all dead people. Maybe there are some demonic entities coming through. Because there is a link in the book that William Blatty wrote, and in the movie, that the boy used to play the Ouija board with his aunt, and originally it was a boy. The movie says a little girl, but originally it was a boy in the true story. And that the child played with the Ouija board with his aunt all the time. And after she died, he thought he was communicating with her in the beginning. And then it got dark and difficult. And things began to change. And that's what led to the possession and the exorcisms and all of that. So now the board has become suspect. And I was fascinated because a lot of the stuff that I know about the board, I know a lot of really dark stories. Obviously, I've dealt with the board multiple times as a, you know, paranormal investigator. So I know all of that. But what I started to read was really fascinating. So not only do we believe that there's evil afoot, if you will, that there's darker entities that will manipulate these boards, I had no idea. I came across this one little sentence, and it was kind of a throwaway in some of the research I was doing. And it was something along the lines of, if you approve or if you ignore the murders that the board has caused in the early 1900s, the board really hasn't got as evil a reputation as we think today. And I thought, sitting there reading it, and I'm like, the murders that it caused? What is that about? So I will tell you a couple traditional Ouija board stories, but what I found out was that apparently in the early 1900s and all the way up till today, there are a series of murders that have taken place, and the explanation by the murderer is that the board told them to do it. And they got so involved with the board and the entity that was communicating with them that they lost their ability to reason and felt compelled to do what they did. So I'm going to visit a couple of those cases because I thought I was just amazed. So this is March 1930, a lady by the name of Clothalild Marchand is found dead at the foot of, I never saw that name before, Clothalild. Clothalild Marchand was found dead at the foot of the stairs in her home where she lived with her husband and her son. It did not take more than a few seconds to realize that she had not fallen down the stairs. She had been severely beaten and thrown down the stairs after she was dead. So the police began to look at the best suspect, her husband, but he wasn't it. Her husband confessed that he had been having an affair with a lady named Lila Jimerson. And so then they began to consider, well, if he couldn't have done it because they could prove it where he was at the time that this had to have occurred, let's look at the mistress. So they find the mistress, and eventually it comes out that the mistress and a friend of hers, Nancy Bowen, were using the board and consulting it, and it said, told Nancy Bowen that Mrs. Marchand was a witch and that she was responsible for the death of Bowen's husband, who had recently passed away, and that it was coming for Nancy as well. So she's devastated, and the answer when asked, what can I do about this, is murder her. So she and the mistress set out to murder her, and they did murder her. And it was at the direction of the board. They would confess to this, and they ended up going to jail, as they should, but it's a amazing story because, you know, I had never heard stories like this. And apparently I did a little bit of reading and there are a lot of these stories. Let's go to 1983. There's a young lady named Bunny Dixon and her boyfriend, Anthony Hall. They and two other young people, another couple, are messing around with the Ouija board. They do it a lot. And the Ouija board tells them that their fortune will be found if they leave Florida and go to Virginia to join this carnival. And this is over the course of days and days. And they believe it. I mean, people, they suspend reality. And I understand that because I come from, you know, the psych background. But I also have to tell you, like, I've done readings for people and they'll ask me things like, should I marry my boyfriend? Ask my grandmother if I should marry my boyfriend. And I'll say, did your grandmother know your boyfriend? And they'll be like, no, but she's dead. She knows everything. And they literally will say things like that to me. And I'm like, no, she's dead. She doesn't know everything. She's not omnipotent. And so they're willing to, like, literally marry somebody or not marry somebody based upon what they think a spirit's telling them.
Well, you've told stories before, though, about how ghosts or spirits seem to know things that they shouldn't know. So that's not a stretch of the imagination to think something like that.
And it's the same with the board. People begin to build a relationship with whatever they think's on the board, and they begin to be compliant with it. And so this young couple, these two young people, or these two couples, they don't have the money to make this journey to Virginia to join the carnival. And they ask, how do we get the money? And the board tells them that they should hitchhike and kill the driver.
Oh.
And that's exactly what they do. A young man, his name was Van Dang, his last name was Van Dang, 25-year-old young man, picked up these two couples, and they murdered him, took his money, and then eventually they confessed. And when they confessed, they actually confessed saying that they didn't understand why they got caught because the board told them to do it. And, I mean, it's insane, isn't it? But these people honestly did it. And we're going to talk about some other really odd stuff. I'm going to go to 2001. There was a 53-year-old woman. Her name was Carol Elvaker. And she's playing the Ouija board with her daughter, Tammy, and Tammy's two teenage girls. When the message came through saying that Tammy's husband, Brian, was evil and needed to be killed. Now, Elvaker just got up very calmly, went to the kitchen, and then walked past them and went toward the bedroom. She stabbed her son-in-law to death and then turned around and tried to stab one of her granddaughters because she said she would later tell them that she believed that the spirit left Brian, the evil spirit left Brian when she killed him and entered her one granddaughter. Her daughter, of course, is freaking out, tries to get away with her two daughters. She does get both the girls in a car. Elvaker actually gets in her car and chases her daughter and her granddaughters to try to kill them all. And later on, she will say she has no idea why she did it. She's labeled as insane, criminally insane, and put in prison. But she had no history of violence. She had never acted this way in her entire life. And just in that space of time, something happened that convinced her that she needed to kill her son-in-law and one of her granddaughters, and eventually that she should kill all of her family. So when we talk about the Ouija boards impacting people, we can talk about the traditional type of stories we were all expecting, but it's insane because there are tons of these stories. I'm trying to pick a few of them out to give you guys. I probably found 20 of these stories over the course of an afternoon, ranging all the way from the early 1900s till the 2000s. We're going to do another one here. So Gary, this gentleman named Gary Gilmore shot two men to death in Utah in 1976. And then he demanded that he be executed for his crimes. It was later revealed by Gilmore's brother, who wrote a book called Shot in the Heart, that their mother, Bessie, believed that when she was a kid, she had messed with the Ouija board and conjured a spirit that had attached itself to her and her children. She always believed that it would cause evil and harm to her and her kids. She said that she believed that the demon she had conjured had attached to her son, Gary Gilmore, and caused him to have a life of anger and violence, which led to the murders and him forcing, he actually sued the state and forced Utah to execute him. He said he didn't want to be alive because he couldn't control whatever was in him. Now, whether he meant that he thought there was a demon in him or not, I can't tell you, but it's interesting because it wasn't something he ever told anybody. He never said, I think I have a demon in me, but he kept saying he couldn't control what was in him. And I have one more story that I'd like to share that is really bizarre. In 1994, an English insurance agent, his name was Stephen Young, was found guilty of the murder of Harry and Nicole Fuller. So he basically went to their home and shot them both at close range multiple times. And it was just a horrendous crime. The police, you know, very quickly figured out who did it. He was arrested and he was on trial. This is where the Ouija board comes in. A month after this guy's convicted, one of the jurors admits to a newspaper that on the night before the final vote, they were staying in a hotel called the Old Ship Hotel. She and four other jurors got a Ouija board out and attempted to discover if he was guilty by talking to one of the victims. And they said, the other jurors admitted it as well, and they said, they asked, who killed you? and the glass spelled out, Stephen Young done it. And they said, how did he kill you? And the glass spelled out, shot. Then they asked him, they talked about it between themselves. They said, what should we do? And they wrote, the board spelled out, vote guilty tomorrow. And they did.
That makes me think, you know, that's, there's a line in one of the Harry Potter books that says, never trust anything that can think for itself if you can't see where it keeps its brain.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's, yeah, and I'm thinking that covers a Ouija board, all right.
Yeah, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So anyhow, it works out that the court has to take another look at this case because he wasn't found guilty based upon evidence. He was found guilty in large part because the board told them to do it.
Spiritual and, jury tampering.
Yeah, seriously. It's bizarre. And I'd never heard of any such thing. But they ended up having to retry him because of this. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, just so everybody knows, a Ouija board does not have to look like the Parker Brothers board. These people made a board out of paper that they just put the alphabet letters on and a wine glass, which, you know, is a impromptu way of making the board. And they confessed they were drinking and they were bored, and they decided to gather up these five jurors and have some fun. And then it very quickly took a turn toward what they were really facing the next day, which was deciding the guilt or innocence of this person, and decided to talk to the dead people. And you can imagine how the family of those people who were shot felt. After this whole thing was done, it took almost a year to get through this whole process, figure out what they were going to have to do, and then have another trial. And there was an article in the newspaper that I read, and it said that it was very disturbing. And the brother of the woman who was shot said, you made a mockery of my sister's life, and now you've made a mockery of her death. And why not a single one of them had the common sense to know that this was just inappropriate in every way? I don't know.
Well, if there were five of them, then they convinced the other seven.
Or the other seven believed they were guilty. The thing is, I mean, the second jury found him guilty as well. They found him guilty on the evidence. And the police officers who were involved, of course, believed that he was guilty. Mm-hmm. But that as the community had to go to that expense and that trouble and had to disrupt the lives of the families who lost their loved ones a second time because these people decided to do something that was a lark and then went with it and actually said in court under oath, we voted guilty in large part because the board told us to. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I read that and then I reread it and I was like, no, nobody would be that stupid. Apparently there are people that are that stupid that you would literally weigh somebody's guilt or innocence, their life in prison, on a board. That totally blew me away to see that. So we're going to do a couple more of these, and then I'm going to go to some traditional stories. So in November of 1933, a lady by the name of Dorothea Turley was using a Ouija board with her 15-year-old daughter in their home in Arizona. The board spelled out that Maddie, the daughter, needed to kill her father. Now, Dorothea had an ulterior motive in mind. She was hot for a local cowboy, and she wanted her husband out of the way. But Maddie didn't know that. And because the board told her to do it, whether Dorothea influenced it or not, Maddie was so convinced the board was telling her what had to be done, she took the gun her mother gave her and she shot her father in the back and killed him. Can you imagine?
These stories, and I'm not doubting their accuracy, but it's just incredulous that somebody would listen to an inanimate object and take someone's life or affect someone's life because of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with like the Slender Man story and stuff like that. Things that are, you know, Slender Man started out as fictional. I actually know who the person was who started the story. And yet two or three young girls murdered another child because they had convinced themselves that Slender Man was going to take them with him to whatever world or realm he was from, and that they had to please him. It is when you suspend your own belief and you don't use your own best judgment at all points, then you are bound to make horrible mistakes. I've often had people say, well, you believe in ghosts, so you know you must be gullible. I'm not gullible at all. I run every single thing through every filter I can think of. If something's going on, we record it, we review it, we look for alternative theories on what it could be. I've physically seen ghosts with my eyes, and my first thought wasn't, oh my gosh, it's a ghost. It's, okay, what is the lighting like? Am I seeing an optical illusion? I'm running all of these different things, scenarios through my head. And then when it's done, usually by the time you've done running all those theories through your head, it's gone. And then you sit down and you write down what you saw. So you don't change the details, because we talk ourselves into and out of things and misremember all the time. It's one of the reasons that the eyewitness account isn't nearly as reliable as we would like to think. It shouldn't probably be the thing used in courts because people misremember. And, you know, and then you get back to, okay, this is what I heard. This is what I saw. This is what we've recorded. And then we start looking for ways to pull it apart, and we don't accept anything until we can't pull it apart anymore. And it's really scary that people are that easily influenced. They changed their lives and taken lives and ruined lives because of something that's set on a board. So the more traditional stories you hear of Ouija boards are things like what we're going to get into now. Had a case years and years ago that I'll share. There was two young adult women. They were in their early 20s. They were sitting in their mom and dad's home and the kitchen messing with the Ouija board. Their 13-year-old brother was upstairs, and they encountered a spirit that seemed to be moving the board. And all of a sudden the oven was not on. There was no reason for anything to have gone wrong. The oven door kicked itself open and shattered. And they said in that moment they were terrified, and they felt a wind go past them. And their brother upstairs, who had no clue what they were doing, started to scream, "There's something up here with me. There's something up here with me. Come and get me." And their house suddenly became haunted, and was haunted for quite a long time, for years and years. And it got increasingly worse. And through the years, their brother had more and more problems, emotional problems. He heard voices, saw things, none of which had happened before. Now, just for the sake of argument, schizophrenia doesn't usually happen until late teens, early 20s, but he was 13 when it all of a sudden kicked in on the same afternoon that they were doing the Ouija board, and they always felt responsible. And after the house blessings and everything was done, he got a great deal of relief and the house stopped being haunted. But it was haunted for a good 12 years until they got a hold of us. You know, and it's just the nature of this, that sometimes it's funny. It's just a game. I get that. But sometimes it's not. Something else steps in and intercedes and gets in the middle. And when those things happen, that's whenever you see a bunch of negative stuff going on. So I'm going to talk about three American teenagers who went to San Juan, Mexico, to visit family. And they were playing with a Ouija board at their family member's house when the first girl, her name was Alexandra, suddenly just kind of froze, like she was in a trance. She began convulsing and screaming, and then the other kids one by one began to do this as well. They ended up being taken to the hospital, One of the kids reported that he was numb. They had double vision. One of them had blindness. One was deaf. There were hallucinations, muscle spasms, and they could not swallow for quite a while.
Wow.
The hospital tried to treat them. The medication didn't work for some great time, and it was what they called an example of a group hallucination. But whatever it was, once they were treated and a priest was brought in to assist with this, eventually the kids got better. And that is, you know, something I have heard time and time again about young people doing the boards and finding that it impacts them negatively. So our next story is, again, a group of people messing with a board. This was in Peru, and there was a young person there named Patricia, and she was about 18 years old. And this is interesting. So everybody thinks it's the board itself that's the problem. It's the intent of the board. So they were bored, these kids. This was in 2015. They decided to download a Ouija board app on their cell phone. One girl's cell phone. I don't know if you knew that they have Ouija board apps, but they do.
Well, I mean, if there's download a demon, I guess there's a Ouija board app. Yeah.
So there is. And so the kids are playing it. You use the little touchpad as the planchet. Okay, you put your fingers on it and it moves and bobbles around. So the kids played with the board. They appeared to have gotten some, you know, something. They were laughing and carrying on. It was a lot of fun. But the one kid, Patricia, she just doesn't feel right. So she says she's going home. When she gets home, her parents notice that she's off, like she's sick. And she's telling them she's okay. When she begins to foam from the mouth and she starts to convulse, they call an ambulance, they get her to the hospital. And at the hospital, they drew the conclusion that she was under some sort of demonic attack. And she would scream, you know, satanic names and things like this. And one of the things in the police report and the hospital reports that was really interesting is that this 18-year-old girl, who nobody had ever heard swearing and carrying on, was obscenely strong and difficult to control, and just the most vile stuff came out of her mouth. And it took weeks of working with her before she got well. And I have to tell you, because I have worked with them so many times, that, and I say worked with them, meaning that I have had to deal with the aftermath of them. I do not use them. So I have a good friend who used to own a business down in Gettysburg. And I was down in that Gettysburg area to visit with some other friends. And I get a text message about, 7 years ago now, from my friend who owned this restaurant hotel. And they said, hey, can you stop on your way out of town? We need to talk to you. Sure, no problem. So I leave a little early on Sunday morning and I go visit them. And they have a lot of hotels have like journals where you can write what happened. Particularly old historic hotels tend to do this. So they have this journal laying on the bar, and I come in and they're not open on Sunday morning. And they're like, oh, thank gosh you're here. And I'm like, sure, what's wrong? And they're like, read this. So they had a rule at this place, because they lived in this hotel as well. They had an apartment there. This was their home. And they had a rule that even though it was haunted, and even though people came here that were ghost hunters, that they requested that you not do tarot cards or Ouija boards in their home, in this building. If you wanted to do them elsewhere, that was fine. But they tell you this whenever you go to book, because they just don't want to have to deal with it. And so these three young women had come and rented the suite on the top floor, and had apparently snuck a Ouija board in their suitcase. And in the journal, they wrote like these really rude comments about the owners. And, you know, just because they're a bunch of stick in the muds and they're old fuddy-duddies doesn't mean we can't have fun. So we snuck the board in our suitcase and we've been using it, blah, blah, blah. And they tell what happened. And then the last night it said, so they were there 3 days. And the last entry was, oh my God, I think we've gotten something angry. And they left, and they left the Ouija board there. Like, they literally got up in the middle of the night and left the Ouija board there. So when they didn't come down in the morning, of course, the owners went up to make sure they were okay, found the door open and the keys laying on the one of the beds and the Ouija board laying out. And they began to look into the journal, and they realized that they were bragging about how they'd been doing the Ouija board every night after the owners shut down the restaurant part and went upstairs to their apartment. And then this last entry, and there she's like, we've rented this room out to 4 different people since these people left. And all 4 of them have fled in the middle of the night and will not return our call. They actually said, a couple of them, just keep the money. I just don't ever want to be there again. So they were like, you know, can you do something? So I walked upstairs, and yeah, you could definitely feel there was just this nasty energy. We went through, we did a cleansing and a blessing, and then I took the board, and I told them I would dispose of it. My friend Johnny Zaffis had taught me how to do that appropriately. Now, my kids have never messed with Ouija boards, and they know better. They never had any curiosity. If you bring up the word Ouija board to my sons, they're going to literally say, oh my gosh, don't mess with that stuff because that's bad. So I come home that day, and I get a message from my son on the way home, my oldest son, saying, can you stop at my house before you go home? I need you. So, of course, I stopped. And laying on his porch is a Ouija board. And I walk up, and I look at it, and he's like, yep. His girlfriend and her sister had decided the night before that while he was working, they got a Ouija board and they started messing with the board. And then they called him because they were hysterical because things were moving in the house. And his infant son was laying in the crib in the same room where they were doing this. And things moved. He said there was a mist that came up out of the floor in front between him and the crib with his baby in it. And he's like, I need help. So that's why he called me. And I just looked at him and I'm like, are you kidding me? And he's like, why? And I told him, I said, in my car, there's a Ouija board. And I told him the story I just told you. And he's like, so they're like taunting you, aren't they? And I said, yep. They got as close as they could get. They got my son and my grandson. Just to let me know that I'm not beyond their reach.
Scary.
That is scary. And so I've had multiple experiences, some of them very terrifying. That was to me the most terrifying because it physically was manifesting mist and moving things. Things were falling off the walls. The baby's bottle came flying. Now, this baby's a newborn. It came flying out of the crib and smacked into the middle of the floor. He spent the entire night sitting up holding the baby because he was afraid to let the baby lay down for fear something would go over its head or face or something, and then reached out to me in the morning. So I have to say that I know that there are skeptics who will say the Ouija board is just your subconscious and you move it even when you don't think you are. And I will agree that sometimes it is that. And I will agree that sometimes it's just a game. And I will agree that sometimes people deliberately do terrible things with the board, like convince somebody else they're going to get murdered if they're not willing to help you commit a murder themselves. But when you take all that out and you still look at it, it's a terrifying to me how many things happen in conjunction with that. People whose lives are changed. The book I started out talking about, The Doorway to the Occult book, there is this line that it's burned on my brain. And it says, there are mental health facilities around the world that are filled with people whose only crime was messing with the Ouija board. And it destroyed them psychologically, emotionally, and ruined their lives. Anything that has the potential to ruin lives like that should not be considered a game and should be left completely alone. Now, our friend who had shared her Ouija board story, I want to share that in another episode coming up. So I didn't read it for us tonight, but I thought after her sharing that story that maybe it was time. Maybe this was the reminder that even though I've been trying to focus on less negative stuff, that it was time for me to reach out and let everybody know this board does not portent any real good. It may not hurt you if you're one of the lucky ones. And I will tell you one last story. I had a case years ago where we had a man who was haunting this apartment. This was like a set of apartments for like lower income people. And the guy was in a pair of tan pants. He had a white shirt and blonde white hair and no eyes. The spirit. Mm-hmm. And anybody
always
who's ever
creepy. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was a young couple that were renting the apartment and they were really rattled. And he would do things like if you would go down the basement stairs to the laundry area, there were openings between the stairs from behind the steps you could reach up and they would feel something grab their leg and trip them. They would pick up the Bible and slam it across the room. The animals were terrified of whatever was going on there. And as we worked the case, I asked the young man, I said, there's something, I just had a feeling. I said, there's something in this house that you brought here. And this entity came with it. And he looked sick. And he said, the old fire extinguisher. He had an antique fire extinguisher that came from his family's home. And it was, he's treated like an object of art. You know, he just had it up on display. Mm-hmm. Here's the story. When he was a kid, he was messing with a Ouija board, him and his sister. And it was working really well. And all of a sudden, he heard his mom scream. He looked out in the hall. She's standing back against the doorway to her bedroom. A urchin, I don't know how else to explain it, a young girl with very long, frizzy, dark hair in what looked like rags, was running from his room doorway past his mother and dove into the wall. From that moment on, that house was haunted. His parents eventually sold the house, and the only thing he took out of the house whenever it was sold was that fire extinguisher. And he said to me, do you think it has anything to do with the haunting? And I said, evil does not care how long it takes. It's been laying in wait since you woke it up as a teenager. And now, because you're entering a new phase of your life and you've disrupted its pattern by bringing it here, it's causing you harm. It's causing you fear. And we ended up working on the case, getting everything fixed up, taken care of. And then the young lady invited us to her wedding. And I thanked her gratefully. And I said to her, but honey, I don't think we'll be coming. And she's like, why? You guys did so much to help us. And I said, well, imagine the conversation at the reception. So how do you know them? Well, we were the people that exercised their house. And she started to laugh. And she said, yeah, I see what you mean. But we don't know how long they will wait to take it out on you. Just because you got lucky doesn't mean that somewhere down the pike, it isn't going to pop back in. And that's the terrifying part about this, is that they will wait. Whatever you wake up, if you don't know how to put it back, it will wait. So with that, I'm done.
Those were some stories.
Can you imagine people murdering or trying to figure out whether to convict somebody?
I don't think any rational person could imagine that type of thing.
Yeah, I had never heard of that. And then, like I said, that one article had that one little line, kind of throwaway line. And it just started me down that rabbit hole. And I just kept going deeper and deeper. And I'm like, oh my goodness, there's like literally dozens and dozens of these stories. I never knew that people were impacted so significantly that they would murder people. So with that, my friend, I will say good evening.
All right. And thank you. Good night.
Okay.